Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to Made of Blood tonight. I do apologize for that. That song is by Chris Allen and it's called Tupelo and Tupelo. My computer is lagging terribly and I do apologize. I'm Karen Miles and this is Jolene Brightson-Treadway. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Doing pretty good.
It's been
quite a rainy day here today, but it's not been too awful bad. Tonight we have a great guest. I think everybody, actually, we're just going to introduce him. His name's Chris Allen, and he's a country singer, and his group is called Southern Thunder. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Jolene.
Hi. Hello.
How are you?
waiting for that rain that Karen just talked about. It's coming our way, so. I live in Williamsburg, Virginia, so it's headed this way.
it's passing over my place right now. I'm up in the West Virginia mountains right now.
Oh, and, my
God. About maybe 30 minutes ago or so, it was like really dark black skies outside.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of interruptions with lightning.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was bad here earlier. You're probably getting the storm that we had this morning because it got really black and it just didn't look good. And I was, oh, my God, you know, I was kind of worried because we had so many tornado warnings in this area over the last few weeks, and it was kind of worried.
I got hit by an F1 in the earlier part of the year. A lot of my Facebook fans might remember when I made some posts and some blogs in there, where I was in a 32-foot RV, and me and my one-year-old son, Buck Wild, we went up on two wheels of six wheels. It smashed a lot of my fence panels.
Ooh.
Mm-mm-mm.
I had like a six-foot privacy wooden fence up around in a, like a little setup area. Almost looks like a little park, if you call it that.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you all got out of that okay and unharmed. Tornadoes are very scary. I don't care for them at all.
No. I've had my share of tornadoes. I grew up in what used to be Tornado Alley in the central part of Texas, just outside of San Antonio. And it's in between Austin and San Antonio. It's a little town called New Braunfels, which is where I was born and raised at. And I remember seeing several tornadoes there in my lifetime. One of them went right in front of the post office. It just ripped up the street like it was some giant backhoe or something went through the road. Didn't do much damage right in that one area, but it ripped up the street right in the center of town. Another one, it came right at my house. I used to live right on a lake. It was actually a river, but we call it a lake. And it came right in at the lake. My dad grabbed me and threw me in a coat closet in the center of the house. And I was out in the front yard playing. And when I finally, 15 minutes later, I'm out in the front yard chasing fish down.
Oh.
It hit the water and just dissipated or whatever, but it threw a massive amount of water up in my yard and I had fish swimming in knee-deep water out there in my front yard 15 minutes after My dad put me in the closet.
Wow. I've never seen anything like that. I think the first tornado that I saw was living in Virginia. We had never had any. And it set down, I don't know if it set down on top of us or close by us or what had happened, but it just set down for briefly and then back up. But the only thing it did was just set a tree over, and that was all. But I'm not very fond of them at all.
No. Well, it seems like the weather pattern is changing more on the east side than what it's ever been. You know, there's a lot of different changes globally going on. Blame it on global warming, whatever you want to call it, because a lot of people think it's propaganda, but actually the history of Earth has gone through many global warmings, many ice ages. It's just part of the evolution. Now, we may accelerate it, but we didn't create we can't prevent it, because you tell me back in the Great American Fern Day area, when you had all the volcano activity, that's, you know, in fact, there was so much volcanic activity that was going on at one point that they believe that it was one of the greatest extinctions took place for the Russian volcanoes that were erupting for 7,000 years caused so much gas effect, the greenhouse effect in the atmosphere. It's what killed off the dinosaurs at one point of it.
I don't know if they'll ever really... I mean, I've done a lot of reading about that, and I found it interesting, and they were talking about possible meteors as well. So, but,
yeah, well, there's several different extinction periods, and we may be in an extinction period now. Who knows? I mean, there's so many things that could be saying we are heading towards an extinction period. We've got Yellowstone, which is one of the largest calderas on the Earth, Canary Islands off Africa as well. There are super volcanoes, and it's swelling very rapidly. And with the shocks that the Earth has gone through recently, you know, I'm sure the fault lines are, you know, increasing every day as they normally would be, but maybe possibly accelerated because of the earthquakes that have taken place.
Right. Well, I know here in Virginia, I'm sorry, Karen.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go right ahead.
I was just going to say here in Virginia, I just saw the head of the newspaper article this morning, and it was, I actually had to ask because 30 years, it only happens here once every 30 years where a bug comes in that is similar to a locust. And every 30 years, it comes back, and this is the 30th year. And they showed a picture of it on the page of the newspaper, and it's something like a calotress or something like that. And it sounds so loud that a lady had called into Camp Perry, which I'm only about 8 minutes from, and they called it in and wanted to know, was Camp Perry doing, you know, military exercises? And the gentleman told her no, that this was the bug that that will be here for the rest of the summer. And I took a look at it, and I said, that looks so much like a locust, but it's louder than a locust. And I went, it really got to me, because I was like, you know, my son is so very interested and reads a lot on the entities of the earth. And I told him about it, he knew immediately what I was talking about without me even trying to explain it. And I thought he already had, you know, researched it and everything, and researched it, the bug itself and what it does, and how it lives in the forest and at night, the sounds that it makes. And here I am trying to tell him, well, it, you know, what was on the front of the cover, and I stood in the store and read it, and I was like, this is really interesting. And of course, he's always been interested in anything that the Earth has that a lot of people don't understand. And so I had to bring that home to him, and I felt stupid. He already knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, like last year, we went through a shield bug plague, and a lot of people in the United States, and I got hit hard, real hard. I've did several radio shows recently and TV shows, especially when I'm doing like the Skype internet show, and I have my studio, which is just it's like a 20-foot shed that I have my stereo system and my PA system set up inside of here. And they'll start swarming at me while I'm talking. It's so embarrassing because the world's sitting there watching these little shield bugs dive bombing at me, but I can't get rid of them. And we call it Orkin, and Orkin, they're like, we can't get rid of them. None of the top exterminators can get rid of them. And so I started doing all kinds of experiment with them. And if you take a cup of water and they'll actually sit underwater holding their breath for a very, very long period of time, and then they'll crawl right up trying to fly away just like nothing happened. I mean, you could flip them with your finger across the room, and they just fly off like nothing happened. These are very indestructible bugs. Orkin can't get rid of them. You can flip them as hard as you can with your finger. Most of the time, it won't even hurt them. Yeah. And we got plagued with them. I mean, I had like tens of thousands of them just everywhere. My attic areas are just completely packed full of them.
Oh, wow. That is very interesting.
I'm curious, what is Chris been doing lately? I know somebody went on a Bigfoot hunt not too long ago.
Yeah, I go on them quite frequently. I mean, I'm obsessed by looking for Bigfoot, I have to admit. And a lot of people out there have seen a lot of the photos that have been floating through the internet with the hair, the wig. But, sorry. Yeah, I actually made my 8th sighting when I was down there in Georgia. We were in an undisclosed area in the foothills of Georgia, the northern Georgia region. And it was very active out there. I mean, there's a lot of activity out there continuously going on. And I actually went out into the woods chasing towards the direction where one was at. And it took off in front of me, going deeper into the woods. And two of them went in one direction. There's three of them all together, or three noises. It could have possibly been a deer. You know, you just hear something, you know, ramming through the woods, but heavier than a deer. It had been something really large, possibly an elk, you know. But regardless, the point was, as I was walking back, I seen some imprints in the grass. The softer grass, the pine bristles, the leaf structures, everything that was on the ground in this area. And I got down on my hands and knees and shined the flashlight just right over the horizon of the earth, and you could see a better imprint in this nature. It was the ground wasn't perfect for casting or anything like that, but nevertheless, you could see the imprints, and I measured them right there, and all the imprints were the same size. And I followed those impressions all the way up to the campsite we were camped at. And less than, I'd say, 30 feet away from our campfire, there is a 6-foot embankment on this road that never was used anymore. It was like well-grown-over road. And here's this embankment where it actually walked up to the embankment less than 30 feet from our campsite and had watched us for who knows how long of a period of time. So these things are very curious creatures. I mean, it was right at us.
Wow.
That's not very fast.
It walked into the campsite?
Yeah, one of the ladies that was on the expedition, one of the expedition leaders, it may have been Jan's wife, I'm not sure which one that actually first saw the Bigfoot, but it walked right into the campsite and just walked out of the campsite like, you know, nothing, an everyday thing.
Wow. So I have never seen a Bigfoot. I've only heard the stories and you know, the pictures that get posted, but as far as seeing one, I have not seen one. I know that there's a story. Well, I started searching, and I know there's quite a few stories here in Kentucky, but there's one that's probably not even 30 minutes from where I live. And for me to drive that stretch of road between Somerset and London, Kentucky now is kind of, especially at night, because I'm very aware of everything around me since I read that story. So it's kind of, I don't know, I get that kind of excitement about it and the thoughts of possibly maybe seeing one while I'm driving. So far,
yeah.
I haven't, but, you know, I would love to be able to see
it. It's a life-changing event, I'll tell you, because each time you see this, it's very, very rare for anyone to have a sighting. And I'm not patting myself on the back, because I've talked to several other people on different shows, and I'm coming up to wondering if it, I have a large amount of electricity in my body. I short watches out left and right, and I short like credit cards, debit cards, hotel keys, anything with a magnetic strip. I've always shorted them out. I'm not sure if that's the reason why I have a high number of sightings or what, but I do know that if you're out in the woods looking for this creature and you're in prime locations of where you actually find a numerous amount of sightings at, your probable chance greatly increases. And if you don't have a really large group that you're in, they stay increased. But the moment you have a large, you know, party, a hoorah, whatever you want to call it, you're probably not going to see it at all, because it's going to be back too far away from the commotion watching you, nevertheless.
Right.
I mean, if it wanted to be seen, it would be seen. These creatures are extremely intelligent. I mean, I think too many people underestimate the actual intelligence of these creatures. They're a stealthful hunter. I mean, they could stalk you down Yeah, intelligent humans can be. I'm not saying. it's something that they can stalk you down. They're intelligent.
Very much so. I'd like to share this with you, Chris. My son is a tracker, an American Indian tracker, and he built a campsite out what we call the BMX, that will clear out into the woods, and he did it with his bare hands, and I'm proud of him because it was something he did without any help. And then one night, when it was an early evening, just going into night, and he can track anything, whether it's human or animal, and he was trained since he was a little boy. And he happened to see a footprint that was too large to be human and too small to be an animal of any kind. And I was walking with him, because sometimes we take walks and strolls back there, and he looked up at me and he said, "Mom, this isn't human." And I said, "No," and I bent down because I was tracking it at the same time. He said, "It's not animal." And he bent down and he traced the whole foot, and he looked up at me and he said, "If I didn't know any better." And he said, "And I know these woods like I know the back of my hand." He said, "I would say this was like a Bigfoot."
Yeah.
And he has done a lot of studying, a lot of just natural studying within being outdoors. He's a very outdoors young man. There isn't anything that he can't do out there and survive.
That was kind of person I like to have on my TV show. Did Karen tell you about my TV show?
No.
No, I hadn't told her about that. Not yet.
I'm in school right now in Bridgemont University in Montgomery, West Virginia, trying to get, you know, a degree. And this is where everything that I'm working for in the college is actually teaching me what I need to do to get this movie out. If I find the resources beforehand, before I graduate from it, well, then, you know, who knows. But the point is, I'm putting a lot of effort and time into getting this movie together. It's called Monster Myth and Mysteries. And I go out all over the place solving unknown situations. It's a lot like a lot of the shows that are currently out there. What separates this show is because I'll have celebrities on the show with me. And we take celebrities out on an expedition. It doesn't have to necessarily be Bigfoot, paranormal. It could be actually ghost, something to do with unknown. It could be even stalking the black jaguars on the East Coast in the United States that once were, you know, dominating the territories here and almost became extinct.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of unknowns that are here. And the show will have that with celebrities. However, if you watch when your children grow up, they watch shows like Sesame Street, which is educational yet entertaining. Well, as our minds mature, we love sense of humor like Saturday Night Live, Hee Haw, different types of shows Roland Martin's Laugh In that no longer exist on TV. And if you had some type of fun entertainment for the entire family live, like on America's Funny Video type of live with live skits, and actually have the celebrities that were on the expedition with us narrating our hunt as we project it and show it to the audiences, then it's educational in the same sense as entertainment. And you can mix the two together. I did surveys on this, and I believe the world population would agree that you can mix entertainment with scientific knowledge and not actually make fun of the creatures that you're looking for. I've had a couple of scientists that were first thinking, well, if you do that, it's almost like you're making fun of Bigfoot. And it's like, well, no, I mean, Jack Link's Beef Jerky did quite successfully well on a creature that is known to exist and just having fun with it. And the world knows that that's just a man in a costume. It's not a real Bigfoot being teased by a beef jerky, but we have fun and enjoy with that. Well, that's kind of like our comedy that we'll have on the show. Little skits like that. And we'll actually have the actual real hunts that are real Bigfoot, real ghost situations. And the reason I have these theories of this nature, because you can't convince the entire world that they're actually existing. You can't convince everybody that there's going to be a ghost or a Bigfoot or the unknown. So those people, as well with the believers, love entertainment. So I give both sides, the believer and the non-believer, entertainment and family wholesome TV to watch. It's called Monster Myth and Mysteries. And I too, I'm half Indian, I'm half Cherokee, and half Irish. I may have little bits and traits here or there, something else or what have you, but I'm a tracker, and he and I would, your son and I would get along great going out tracking.
Oh, yes. Yes, you would, because Robert, his name is Robert Sparrowhawk, but Robert has been trained by Tom Brown Jr. and also by many elders throughout his little lifetime. And anyone that knows him will follow him into the woods, because they know that there isn't anything he can't see, hear. His even listening to the concentric rings of the forest, you know, and of the waters, and he's so self-aware, his awareness is so high that I'm gonna laugh when I say this, but it really isn't funny. There isn't even a cop that could catch him. And I say that because it's true.
Well, as long as he's not wanted.
No, he's not wanted.
Have him contact me through the Facebook link off of chrisallen.com. And that's chrisallen.com. And
I
it'll
will.
Say my Facebook link will be right there. Link up to my friends up there, and I'll add him as my friends. And I'll need to talk to this guy. Sounds like somebody I'd love to have on the show as a regular person on the show.
Oh, that would be wonderful. He gets out there, and once he gets out into the woods, you can't find him. And there was one time when he said, "Mom," he said, "I came across something in the woods." He said, "I stood there. It stood there. It looked at me. I looked at it," and he said, "I wasn't afraid." And I said, "Well, what was it?" And he said, "I don't know." He said, "I'm not going to say it was a Bigfoot. I'm not going to say anything." He said, "All I'm going to say is I don't know what it was, but whatever it was not afraid of me, and I was not afraid of it." And he said, "It sensed my spirit, and it sensed the fact that I had no fear in me whatsoever." And he's like that even with copperhead snakes. He held a copperhead right in his hand, and his friends went completely, you know, ballistic because he had a copperhead, and he just held it. It laid down in his lap. Huh?
Yeah. I always catch rattlesnakes and copperheads, and I always have. I had one for a pet snake for a very long period of time until I found out the crime that you evolved by having one as a pet, which I didn't know, but I had almost 2 years keeping him as a pet, and I did a lot of experiments with him, and I learned a lot about the snake, and I'm sure he learned a lot about me. And the old wives tell, everybody listen to this, if you do not know this, the rattlesnake can jump further than the length of its body. I have this on videotape that he did one day. I had him in a giant rabbit cage, opened the cage diagonal corner from where the rattlesnake was. The snake was 5 foot, the cage is 5.5 foot across.
Wow.
He jumped and hit the lens of the camera as I raised the door, and I have all this on videotape, where if my face would have been there, he would have bit me right in the face. And you have to have a class 1 permit for these guys. And they actually have a stronger, once like a cycle, they have a different bite stage. If they want to kill their predator, whatever it is they're biting after, if they want to kill it, they have a lethal bite. But it's not that strong all the time. It's like certain cycles throughout the month. And then they go into hibernation stage where you can't get them to eat. They hibernate. Then when it starts warming up outside, they start eating again. And I got to watch everything about these guys. I mean, they're very interesting creatures.
Very much
so. I'm not scared of any kind of snake.
No, he isn't either. And he held it right in his hand, and it ended up falling asleep on his lap. And he just petted its head, and it looked up at him like it was a brother. And that's the way he is with animals. But he does a lot. He'll go out into the woods and just, you know, walk. But it's very interesting just to watch him and stand from a distance.
Sorry about that. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying he sounds like a very interesting guy.
Thank you.
He is.
Karen knows him. He loves talking with her, and he goes out and he's fearless, and he just takes a run for it, and he's like one with anything that's out there. It's incredible to watch his spirit work.
See, when I find the Bigfoot, that's usually my theory on finding the Bigfoot. I normally go solo or very few people, and I'll go out deep into the woods, and I'll stay there for many days. And if I find no activity, if I don't find anything in the area, normally I'll pack up and go into another area that may just be, you know, not so far from there, a few miles away or so.
Wow.
And then try to find the same way. And then several times I've camped, I can tell you at least, I'd say, 9 months in a row, if not longer. I love spending many, many, many weeks on end out in the woods. And it's the only way you can really do research is if you don't at least spend some time out there. A weekend's not really much time to give it, better than
That's
none.
Right.
But if you spend time with nature and you're with nature, you find all the creatures and where they all live, what tree, what root, what rock, whatever, what cave. You know everything, and you know all your neighbors.
That's right. And that's the way that Karen knows that. That's the way that he is. And he even built a second camp in case anything ever happened to the first one. And so far nothing has happened except the animals have made it their home, and he loves that. And he made it with the big, huge boulder rocks and made a huge pit fire so that he could cook and get warm if it was cold or something like that. And he's amazing to watch. And he learned it at such a young age that he absorbed every single aspect of Mother Earth. You know, being Chiricahua Apache and Lakota Sioux, which is what my father raised me in the Apache tradition, and my father also taught me all the Lakota Sioux traditions so that I would know both of his blood, and I do, and I'm thankful for that because I lost him a year and a half ago. And I miss my dad very much, but at the same time, I am grateful for everything that he was able to teach Robert as Robert was growing up, and also, you know, teach me as I was growing up. And so I was able to also teach Robert at the same time as Granddaddy was teaching him. So he has a great many teachers out there, and he's awesome when he's out in the woods.
About a year ago, no, it's actually longer than that now, the Christmas before last, the November, October, November, I spent a little over a month in Apache Reservation in the White Mountains. And I was outside of Seligman, Arizona, and this is where the movie Cars with Lightning McQueen and Mater and all those, that was actually the town that they call Radiator Springs. Well, the name of the real town is called Seligman, and the whole town's decorated up just like the Cars cartoon. It's right on Route 66, so, I mean, it's very realistic as far as how they got the concept of writing the story or what have you. But anyways, I was up on the mountains up there, and we had a blizzard come in, and the mountains got ripped with 100-mile-an-hour-plus winds up there during this blizzard. And I had a sixth sense that I always listened to, and it said, get off the mountain now. It wasn't compromising. It was like this feeling, get off the mountain now. This storm will kill you. So Rob Price, which was my bodyguard that was up there, we came off the mountain, and it was, I think it took like 2 hours to go 7-8 miles or so, maybe an hour, but it was just a ridiculous amount of time to go on this long road. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like forever getting off of it. And we got down to the town of Seligman and stayed at Annalise's place called the Pizza Joint where I performed at. And the wind there was 77 miles an hour going over top of our roof. And after the storm was all over with, there were three men that got killed on the lodge next to me up on the mountain where we were camped at. They were out elk hunting, and they couldn't find their way back to their cabin area.
Their cabin.
And they found them frozen behind the trees up there. And so there's a lot of risk when you're actually out there looking for Bigfoot. There are natural and occurring accidents that can happen. You could slip and fall if you're solo, and nobody's around to know what happened to you if you knocked yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
There's predators out there outside of what you're looking for that you're snacks to them. I mean, if a big old male mountain lion pounced on you behind your neck and snapped your neck, you know, there's nothing you could do to get out of there. You know, there's a lot of natural risk involved with it. And then when you actually find what you're looking for, you know, as your son was talking about, he felt peace and was not afraid of it. There are situations that you can come up on when you actually find a Bigfoot. If you found an aggressive Bigfoot, no matter how calm and collected you are, it will and can kill you. So you just have to judge the situation as you're occurring the situation.
Exactly.
These are huge creatures. I mean, they are capable of doing fatal injury to multiple people.
Exactly. We're down to the last just few seconds of the show. Do you want to put your website out for everybody so that they can go and check you out?
Love to.
Yeah.
If you look me up on YouTube, it's under Chris Allen and Southern Thunder, and that's with a K, K-R-I-S-A-L-L-E-N, and Southern Thunder. My website is chrisallen.com, K-R-I-S-A-L-L-E-N.com. And you can link onto my Facebook site. I go on Facebook normally daily. And if you have something interesting that you need to tell me, you can link up and be my friend on Facebook. And it's been wonderful having me on your show tonight. Thank you.
Well, thank you for so much for joining us. And in June, we'll be doing more than 30-minute shows. So hopefully we would love to have you back on. And we'll spend 2 hours talking.
I love to be on your show. We'll look forward to it in June. And by then, I'll have other expeditions under my belt with new experiences to share with you.
That sounds great. And I want to wish you a great night. And I want to thank everybody that tuned in to listen. We appreciate everybody. And everyone have a great evening.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.